Welcome to the Last Round MMA.
The guy's never beaten me. In order to be the champion, you have to beat the champion.
A podcast for the MMA fan.
Imagine that. Look at everybody up here. They're all dressed like me. They're all trying to talk like me. They're all trying to be me.
Bringing you in-depth interviews and more from across the MMA world.
This is like pride. You know, everybody's here. I feel great. And, you know, I can't wait. Saturday night, I'm going to crush this guy hype.
Are you ready? Let's start the show.
To the Last Round MMA podcast, and today we have one of the most prominent MMA journalists in the business, John Morgan. Thanks for joining me, John.
Nah, thanks for having me, brother. Appreciate it.
Well, let's jump straight into it. So I'm sure everybody wants to know, how did you get your career started in MMA?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. You know, at a young age, I realized I was not going to be a good enough athlete to be a professional athlete, but I wanted to be around sports. And so I thought, well, what about being a sports reporter? I mean, somebody's got to go out there and write the stories and all that. And I had a decent gift for writing, I guess. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I want to be a sports reporter. Basically, I just want to be a writer, to be honest with you. And then, you know, I kind of had this passion for MMA that was born along the way too, just as a fan. You know, the first UFC I ever went to was UFC 16 way back in the day. So it's been following since the early days. And, you know, eventually was just kind of able to marry those two passions together. And it was fortunate because, to be honest with you, I really didn't think in the early days of MMA about being an MMA reporter, an MMA journalist, because it wasn't really a field. You know what I mean? It was just it wasn't an industry. You know what I mean? It was just this Wild West thing. But, you know, was kind of able to marry those two passions together of wanting to be a sports reporter and loving MMA, and was able to get in kind of very early, basically. You know, started messing around with it in like 2006. And so, you know, got in on kind of the ground floor, and it's just kind of flourished from there.
Everybody that's listening, UFC 16 was Frank Shamrock against Igor Zinoviev. Is that how you pronounce
Zinoviev.
It?
Zinoviev. Yeah, it was a big slam, knockout, scary finish, man. I don't think Igor ever fought again after that. So it was pretty wild one.
So at that time when you thought you were going to go into combat sports and you saw the UFC, did you have a feeling that it was going to stick around? Because it was still very underground at that time.
Yeah, it was really underground. And I thought it would stick around, but I honestly, to say that I envisioned the type of popularity that it has today would be an absolute lie. You know what I mean? I first saw it in Blockbuster, you know, the way a lot of people did. Blockbuster video stores, VHS tapes, you know, rented the first couple of them, saw Hoist Gracie, and it just blew my mind. You know what I mean? It's not what we thought fighting was, you know, and here he is just kind of redefining what fighting is. And I was like, this is amazing. And I started just studying everything I could. And I think the first UFC pay-per-view I bought live was UFC 7. And then, like I said, attended 16, but was just reading everything I could, studying everything, learning about it, you know, started training at that time as well, and loved it. And I thought there was a place for it, but I never, to be honest with you, envisioned that it would be as globally popular as it is today. That's been pretty amazing to watch.
Why MMA over boxing?
You know, it's funny. I think part of it may be that, you know, I grew up a professional wrestling fan when I was a little kid, right? Like Saturday night's main event, you know, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man and Andre the Giant, all that stuff. And then when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I figured out that, oh, these aren't actual fights. You know, this is entertainment. And I was like, ah, damn it. You know, well, I don't like it now. I thought it was a real fight. And then when I started to see, you know, I got a little bit older. Actually, I saw Muay Thai on a tape, actual Muay Thai from Thailand. And I just thought it was incredible to me, you know, and I was like, oh, this is what a real fight looks like. And I guess I've always preferred just, you know, kind of all encompassing arts, you know, the fact that you can do everything. Still, you know, I'll tune in for a boxing match. I mean, high level boxing is incredible to watch, but, I think I've just always kind of leaned towards that all encompassing stuff. And I think honestly, like I said, just Hoist Gracie showing how effective grappling can be, like that to me was like black magic or voodoo or something. You know what I mean? It was just like, what is this stuff? You know, a triangle choker, he choked him out with his legs. Like what? I mean, this is insane. And so I think that's why I gravitated towards it, because it felt like it was something new and developing and that I'd never seen before. And I think that's why I kind of leaned towards that.
Who were your favorite fighters before you kind of started in the sport as a journalist?
You know, it's funny, you know, Matt Hughes was obviously a dominant figure back in the early figures of the day. I mean, you know, it's kind of was, as I was starting, was Chuck Liddell, obviously hugely popular figure. Hoyce, again, you just have to give it to Hoyce. I mean, all those, you know, you just take all those eras, you know, Marco Hujas, you look at like the man, Mark Kerr, Mark Coleman, man, the late Kevin Randleman. I mean, there was just all these amazing figures in the time it was developing. So, yeah, it was a little bit of all of them, man. Those pioneers, it's Don Fry. I mean, so just as I think of those pioneers, Oleg Tektarov was another one that was amazing. I mean, they just start rattling off. They were all so fun to watch.
Just tell us the journey from, you know, seeing UFC 16 to MMA Junkie.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. So I put myself through school working in the restaurant business. And when I got done, I got offered a job at the Dallas Morning News and for like $25,000. And I got offered a job to stay in management at the restaurant that I worked at for $50,000. So I was like, well, that's a pretty easy choice. I'll take the 50, you know, and took that and did really well with the company, man. I really enjoyed working there. It was a small company. We were opening up new restaurants across the country. I moved up really, really quick. And by the time I was 24, I was a general manager of the restaurant, you know, had like 100 employees working for me. You know, we were doing like $4 million a year in business and, you know, was running the joint and I was doing well for myself. But I got to about 27, 28. And I was like, man, I do like this business, but this isn't really what I wanted to do. This isn't what I set out to do. And I thought, man, you know, I don't want to look up and be, you know, it's funny because at the time I said, I don't want to look up and be 40. Now I'm about to turn 44. But, you know, I was like, I don't want to look up and be like, man, you know, I never tried to do what I actually wanted to do, which was, you know, be a sports journalist. So at the time, MMA Weekly was the website that I went to a lot. And they had a forum that was in there that I would frequent. Didn't post a whole lot, but I would read the forums. This is back in the early message board days of the internet and such. And there was a post on there that said, hey, we need help. And it was from Gorgeous George from Tag Radio. It's him and Frank Trigg. And it's what's now MMA Junkie Radio. But he was like, we need somebody to help recap our interviews for stories to put on MMA Junkie. And MMA Junkie like just started. I hadn't even heard of it. At the time, it was UFC Junkie. Though the UFC sent us a nice legal letter shortly after saying that perhaps we should consider changing our name to something different. I think it was called a cease and desist letter, but you know, whatever, you can call it what you will. But anyway, so I just volunteered for that and I said I'd like to do that. And so you know, gave him a writing sample, and Dan Stupp, who was the founder of MMA Junkie, liked the work that I did. And he said, yeah, this guy can write, like, let's use him. So it started out as just free work. You know, I'd work 12 hours a day at the restaurant. I'd come home, I'd listen to one of their interviews that they had done on the radio show, and I'd write up like a recap story, and it would get posted on MMA Junkie. And it was just kind of like free internship type work. But fortunately, MMA Junkie's traffic was growing, and Dan Stupp was ready to bring somebody on part-time. And he asked me if I'd like to come on part-time, and I did. I actually stepped down as the general manager of my restaurant and promoted the assistant general manager over me so that I could still work, but that I could be off on the weekends because the general manager had to be in there on the weekends. So I demoted myself and made him the boss so that I could kind of, you know, work weekends and be around, and did that for about 6 months. And then that turned into a full-time offer, and I ended up moving to Las Vegas. And that's kind of how the whole journey began. So it was really a really, really fortunate break, to be honest with you. I mean, I think it's true that it seems like the people that work the hardest get the luckiest, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you just have, but I can't, you know, deny that was a heck of a lucky break and just fortunate timing.
When you said you put yourself through school, was that journalism school or?
Yeah. So I just went to community college and put myself through school there. Yeah.
Can you remember your first MMA interview?
Jeez. No, I probably should. I need to go back and look, man. I need to go back and figure that out. It's funny. You know, I just left MMA Junkie, and I think the day before I was leaving, I was in our content management system, you know, the website, and I was just kind of looking at it, and I noticed that if you look at bylines on MMA Junkie that have my name on it, now this is not like things that have staff bylines or just, you know, stuff that we posted, but things that actually have my byline, it was over 10,000 pieces of content that had my byline on it, which is amazing. You know, it was a 15-year run there, but I'd have to see, maybe next time I'm with one of the guys, because I don't think I have access to the back end anymore. I'll have to go in there and see what the first thing in there with my name on it is. Because to be honest with you, at this point, I don't remember, and I probably should.
Do you ever get nervous before any interviews? You know, if it's, you know, just the fighter themselves or just due to the fact that the interview is going to be big and, you know, it's going to have a huge reach?
Sure. I mean, so this, I mean, I've done it so many times now that I honestly more what I get nervous about is just tech stuff, making sure everything is going to work properly, you know. And now, you know, it's funny how the pandemic has changed everything, right? You know, the Skype video interviews and stuff like that, to be honest, I never liked them. And I thought the quality was always a little bit low and I felt like it lacked a little bit of something. But I think as we all in the world got forced to do them all day, every day, like now people, like, I feel like the emotion's pretty decent. I feel like people use them and they're okay. And so I'm okay with them, but I'm always nervous that like, dude, don't let the connection drop or dude, don't let the audio not work or whatever. So not so nervous about that as more just the stuff around it and having something malfunctioning and losing work products. That's the kind of stuff that makes me nervous, honestly.
For people that are watching that want to follow in your footsteps into the industry, do you prepare questions before an interview or do you just have like an opening and then just go with the flow?
A little bit of both. I like to have some questions or at least some bullet points, some things to remember that I want to talk on. I don't have a photographic memory, to be honest with you. So, you know, and especially, I think it helped me. Look, we're doing fight cards every week. We might be doing multiple fight cards. You know, I interviewed people this week from Bellator, UFC, PFL. It's kind of hard to keep all the cards straight sometimes. So usually before an interview, I'll just, you know, pull up their record, remind myself of where are they at in their career, what are the last few fights been like. And then as soon as I see it, I'm like, okay, yeah, remember that fight. Oh, yeah. Remember all that. But I get a little notes together and maybe like some bullet points as to things I want to say. Just I think in case you do draw a blank for some reason, for whatever reason, if you're like lose your train of thought, at least you have a couple of notes there to kind of put you back. But I think the big key, and it's everybody. This is literally everybody. You'll start out in the beginning so nervous about getting to your next question that you're not really listening to the answer. You know what I mean? You're just thinking about what you're supposed to say next. And it'll happen to everybody. You'll go back and you'll listen to your interview and you'll be like, holy hell, why didn't I follow up on that? Why didn't I ask that? You know what I mean? So that's the thing. That's why I say a little bit of both. I want to have notes, but you don't want to be so rigid, I think, in your structure that you're not actually paying attention to the answers and you're not willing to go a different direction if all of a sudden you're like, wait, that's way more interesting than what I thought we were going to talk about. And so I think you have to have that flexibility there.
Have you ever done an interview where afterwards either the person you're interviewing or you yourself have decided, you know what, I'm not going to publish that?
Yeah, I have. And there's been some things, you know, it's funny. it's really funny, actually. One was me. It was Colby Covington in his very first interview. This is funny because it's topical because of everything that's happening lately with Colby Covington. But in his very first interview in the UFC, I was at his UFC debut in Macau. And, you know, he was a roommate with John Jones in college. And I was like, wow, that's cool. So what a jumping off point for a guy. And immediately the guy is like, yeah, John Jones is a drug user and a womanizer and all this. And I'm like, what? I'm not going to use this. Like, dude, you're just getting in here. I'm not going to use this stuff. So there's been stuff like that, but there have been things where people will call you back and say, hey, listen, I probably shouldn't have said that. You know, I didn't mean this, or I was a little upset or whatever. And I think you have to respect that. Now, you know, listen, if it's, you know, some kind of factual piece of information that you confirmed that they're trying to, I mean, you have to be sensitive to it. I mean, if it's on the record, it's on the record. But I think, you know, maintaining relationships and maintaining trust is key. And I think if you know, if it's not something like, what I always say is this, it's like, look, there are some real serious issues in the sport. Like, for instance, if you're doing an interview and somebody says to you, hey, just so you know, fighter A actually tested positive for steroids last time, but we as an organization made sure that the public never found out about that. And then they call you back and they go, hey man, I didn't really mean to say that. It's like, dude, I can't, you know what I mean? I can't ignore that. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you just put another fighter at safety and you just covered up, you know, a drug tester. That has got to go public. You know what I mean? But if it's just something like, you know, you're doing an interview and fighter A says fighter B is a jackass and whatever else, then calls you back. It's like, dude, I'm sorry. I was kind of in a bad mood. I really don't want that out public. Okay, you know, no problem.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a fighter fall out with you due to your position? You've written something or you've said something on the podcast that they didn't like, or you've picked against them in a fight you said they were going to lose?
Well, it's funny. So, you know, I mentioned all the topical Colby Covington stuff. So Colby is mad at me right now, as best I can tell, because he thinks I said that he wasn't deserving of a title shot. To the best of my recollection, I don't even need to say the best of my recollection. I know I didn't say that because I don't believe that. And this is another thing I always tell people, right? People ask for advice. I say, do not ever write, say, tweet, social media, whatever, anything that you wouldn't be willing to say to somebody's face, because you need to be willing to say what you believe and be willing to back up what you believe. And so I know that I've never said that because it's not something I believe, but he's pissed at me and won't answer my questions because he thinks I said he wasn't deserving a title. So they do. I will say, especially, you know, and I don't know for all sports, but I will say, you know, MMA is still a pretty small world, and you may think, ah, oh, they'll never see this, they'll never say that, but they do, you know, they do. It's funny. So in the beginning of MMA Junkie, we never did fighter picks, like staff picks or anything like that. And then when USA Today came in, Gannett is the parent company, when they bought us in 2011, they came in and they said, you've got to do picks. You have to do picks. It was just, it's not even in a discussion. You guys got to do picks. You're supposed to be experts. Do picks. They're like, all right, fine, whatever. So we started doing picks, and I was like, yeah. And I told myself, this was like 2011, 2012. I was like, ah, they're never going to. Nobody's ever going to see it. We were probably being a little too worried about this that we thought we were going to show favorite. And I swear to God, like the second card we did, it was Tyron Woodley. And the story at that time was always that Tyron Woodley had, you know, kind of choked in big spots. You know, he wouldn't, you know, he'd get to a big position and then went turning. Well, he came in, he went to Macau and he knocked out Dong Young Kim. And in the post-fight interview, I was like, you know, hey, you know, Dana White standing right there beside you. He's doubted you in big moments. You know, do you have a message that you want to deliver to him now that, you know, you've done that? And he's like, he said, you know what, John? I don't know about that, but what I do know is that you picked the wrong guy. And I was like, oh man. So you did see the picks. But you know, listen, you try not to, you know, they try not to take too personally. You try to just do that. But yeah, listen, they'll say they don't see it, but they'll see it. So be, you know, always make sure that you stand behind anything you write, that, you know, that snarky tweet that you may think is good. Like, it's going to come back and bite you in the ass, man. So don't do it. Make sure that anything you say, you would be willing to say to somebody's face.
You try to not to get too close to the fighters for that sort of thing.
Yeah, you do. I mean, it's impossible not to develop relationships just because, like, I look at a guy like Cowboy Cerrone. You know what I mean? Like, I've interviewed that guy 50 times. You know what I mean? Over the course of his career, so it's like you develop a relationship. You end up seeing him in certain places and say, you know. So it's that's going to be natural, but I think you try to keep it at a distance. You keep it as a professional relationship. You know, you're not in this to make friends. It's good to have friendly relationships with people so that, you know, when they see you, hey, what's going on? And they can talk openly and stuff like that. But yeah, you got to be real careful about, you know, developing too close of relationships with people because it skews, you know, kind of how you can cover them and what can be said and that sort of thing. So it's something you have to be wary of.
Someone that's trying to break into the business, do you recommend like going to a gym, like immersing yourself in the MMA world, you know, trying to rub in shoulders, networking?
100%. You know, listen, I always say, if you're trying to get into this, start local. You know what I mean? Start with your local scene because, you know, if you come in and say, look, I want to be a mixed martial arts journalist, I want to cover the UFC. I mean, how are you going to get noticed? Now, if you could come up with something really, really unique, a really unique angle of how you're covering it, then absolutely. You know what I mean? If you're covering it from, say, you know, your country's perspective or heck, maybe it's a different language. I mean, there are ways you can do it. But if it's, you know, an English language website just generally covering the U.S., it's going to be really hard for you to get noticed. But what I always say is start local, man. Go to, you know, your local gym, your local organization or whatever. I mean, there's athletes there. There's organizations that are dying for coverage. You know what I mean? That would love to see some print out there, some publicity out there and some coverage of their events. And you're going to do that. And the other thing that's going to do, two things it's going to do. First, it's going to get you practice. You know what I mean? I always say, people say, oh, you know, how should I get started? Just start. Even if you want to be a writer, write for your own website. Even if nobody's ever going to see it, just so you're getting that practice because you're going to get better at it. You're going to get faster at it. You're going to get more accurate. So that practice will help you. If it's doing video, if it's podcasting, whatever the case it may be, just do it because you're going to get better at it the more you do it. But the other thing you're going to do is if you're starting local, is you're going to start developing relationships. You're going to start developing contacts. You're going to start having a little Rolodex of people that you can get a hold of in the industry. And this industry is not that big. So, I mean, there's pretty quick connections to everybody. And then what happens if, you know, you're covering your local gym and you started covering this kid when he was an amateur. And next thing you know, he's 6-0 and he's going to the UFC. And next thing you know, and he's always going to remember, or she, you know, that you were the one that was there when nobody else was there. You were the one that was covering them when nobody else gave a damn. And, you know, unless they get incredibly big, you know, you get like a Conor McGregor or a Ronda Rousey. That's kind of tough for them to hang on to those local contacts because their time is so valuable. But the majority of those athletes are always going to remember that. And they're always going to give you the time of day. And now you can start, you know, elevating yourself as well.
Any recommendations how to stand out? So, for example, you know, a lot of fighters before the fights, they get asked the same questions like, how's training camp? How's this? How's that? And they're always going to say good. Would you recommend coming out with a different type of curveball question? So, you know, I'm sure there's just hundreds of people there. So it gets to, you know what, I can, the one question I can remember was that off the cuff question from that guy.
Yeah, you know what? That's definitely a good thing. And I think it's true. It's a little bit different if you're talking about like an event week, like a live event week versus a non-event week when you're just doing maybe like a feature interview or something like that. Because at that point, you definitely want to take it in a different direction. If they're not on fight week, you know, go in a different direction. See what their interests are. See what kind of things they have interest in outside of MMA. What kind of causes they support. What, you know, whatever you can do. You know, talk about anything. I think fight week's a little bit different, especially, you know, as they're cutting weight. You kind of do have to keep it a little bit routine, just because they're so dialed into what's going on and they're talking about that event. And it's like, you know, let's say they're getting ready for a world title fight and you're talking about something silly outside. Like, why are you asking me this now? So it's a little bit different, but absolutely try to think outside the box, try to cover something a little bit different, because as you said, it's going to give you a unique piece of content. And you said, it's going to develop that relationship with the athlete as well.
You touched on earlier that you obviously were involved in some martial arts training. Do you think that helped you as a journalist?
I think so. Yeah, I would recommend it. You know, obviously it's been way too long since I've been in the gym. I need to get back in it. You know, it's funny, but now I take my kid and it's I get the same thing. So, you know, it's funny, as my kid got old enough to train, the idea was I would take him to the gym, and while he was taking a class, I would take a class and we could train at the same time. But to be honest with you, I just love watching him train so much and supporting him and seeing him learning and stuff, that now I can't even go train because I love being there for him so much. Maybe as he gets a little bit older and he doesn't need me there as much, it'll be a little bit different. But yeah, I would definitely recommend, you know, if you can go train, if you can physically go train, go train a little bit, man. I think it helps a little bit. Just, nobody said you have to be a black belt, you know, in anything, but to understand the movement a little bit, to understand what, especially in the grappling game, like what positions feel like and what's going through your mind at that time. And clearly you're not doing it at a high level. You know, I trained, I sparred a little bit. I never got to a place where I wanted to compete. To be honest with you, it was, you know, so long ago, but you know, I was supporting myself and barely making the bills. As like a server waiting tables. And I'm like, man, if I go compete and break my arm, I don't have any insurance to pay all my stuff. Like, what am I going to do? So I was always a little hesitant to do that. But I think even just the training itself, and that's it. Even if you can't, you know, maybe if you can just watch there are some gyms that'll let you come watch a practice. Even if you just want to watch a practice to educate you, just kind of see how it, I don't know. I've never been. Can I watch pro team practice today? And usually they might say something like, all right, listen, first, you got to establish some relationship, because if they don't know who you are, they might be like, oh, yeah, you're going to come watch? I know who you are. You're friends with my opponent coming up. No, you can't watch practice. But once you develop a relationship, you know, they'll probably tell you you can't film anything. We don't want you to shoot anything. But, you know, if you want to watch, yeah, please come watch. So I think if you can train, it'll help you out. It's not, you know, necessary to fight. But if you can, great. But at the very least, go watch. Get a feel for it.
How has the media landscape changed since you first started in the business?
You know, it's funny, because like it's night and day, man. And, you know, in the beginning, first of all, just the growth. I mean, the beginning, you know, I started doing this back when we were in the era of trying to get people to accept it as a real sport. You know what I mean? And try to people to get, it used to be funny, you know, I'd be on a plane flying to an event or something. The person next to you, oh, so what do you do for a living? Like, oh, I'm a sports journalist. Oh, really? What do you cover? I mixed martial arts. So like, mixed martial arts, like the UFC. They're like, oh, like cage fighting. Like, oh, you thought I was a nice guy. Now you're looking at me disgust. What's going on? So that's changed a little bit. And then I don't think we're fighting for that education anymore than we used to. It's also changed from an actual technical standpoint, in terms of just, like I said, I wanted to be a writer when I started this. I'd say writing is the smallest fraction of what I do now, man. You got to shoot photos. You got to shoot video. You got to do podcasts. You got to do multimedia now, man. That's just the reality of it. Very little, you know, written word is consumed that much, especially lengthy written word. So, always tell people, like, especially if they happen to be in journalism in school or whatever, is do learn every piece of tech that you can, learn every piece of software you can, learn everything, because it's so valuable. You got to be a jack of all trades to be valuable, because the more roles that you can fulfill, the more opportunities you give yourself to get a position. You know, if a company is looking at a guy who's a phenomenal writer, and then the other guy is maybe not as phenomenal of a writer, pretty good, but can also do, you know, shoot video and stills and do editing, like, guess who's getting the job? You know, it's the guy that's, you know, the Swiss Army knife over there. So, you know, definitely learn and immerse yourself as much as you can in all those kind of social media and or multimedia functions, I should say.
You just mentioned you obviously traveled a lot for MMA. What's the favorite, your favorite countries you visited and favorite arenas?
You know, Brazil is awesome for a couple of reasons. You know, like, you know, sitting on the beach in Rio with a ice cold $1 beer in your hand, man, you can't beat that. Like, that's amazing. And the atmosphere is amazing. I mean, the passion of the Brazilian fans and the U Vai Morrer chants, and you know, Brazil is a pretty awesome place to go. I love that a lot. But, you know, going to Japan, and you know, I never got to go to a big Pride event, but I did get to go to UFC over there a little bit. And you know, the crowd that's like, you know, so quiet, but yet, you know, they cheer for a guard pass. You know, they all start applauding. I mean, they understand the intricacies of the move. You know, that a guard pass elicits, you know, a nice applause from them. That's great. And then, you know, just been lucky to visit some other places. I mean, all over Europe's been incredible. Man, you know, the O2 Arena, the night Michael Bisping beat Anderson Silva, that was one of my favorite fights of all time live. But being able to see, you know, going to China, going to Russia, you know, getting a chance to see these places, pretty fortunate, man. My son's 9, he actually turns 10 in May, and I enjoy being home a lot more than I used to, because, you know, I think as your kids get older, you want to be around them and take them to games and practices and stuff like that. But having the opportunity to travel the world as much as I have, it's been a blessing for sure.
What would you say is the biggest misconception of your job? I'm sure everyone thinks, you know, John travels 5-star. He's just hanging out with celebrities nonstop. It's just the best job in the world.
Yeah, that's a good. And listen, it is a pretty damn good job. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here. I try not to ever complain about it, because it's like, what are you really complaining about? But yeah, it's a lot. It's way more hours than I think anybody realizes, man. There's a lot more 12, 14, 15 hour days than there are 8-hour days. You know what I mean? It's just, especially in this sport, man, where it's just nonstop moving. It's 24/7. There's no off season. It's global. There's, you know, a ton of organizations, a ton of athletes, all newsworthy. So it's a lot more hours than you might think. The time on the road, you know, the travel has been great, but it is funny. Like, you know, people, oh, you went to this city. Did you go do this? Like, nah. Did you go to this? Nah. I saw the hotel, and I saw the bar next door to the hotel. That was the only thing open at night when I got done working. So it's a lot more kind of grunt work and long hours than you realize. But I'll throw that in with the caveat that I am not complaining about it, because it is a pretty damn good job.
What would you say is your favorite moments of your career so far?
That's tough, man. I think, you know, it's moments that I witness, you know, and it's not anything about me personally. I think, you know, I will say one personal one that was me was being in Red Square, just kind of, you know, hanging out in Moscow and going to visit Red Square felt pretty damn cool to me. I guess, you know, I'm of an age that when I grew up, you know, like Russia was not a place that Americans were intended to go, and, you know, to be in the heart of it and see how beautiful it was. Now that, I mean, I don't know, that to me was like cool. Like, man, this is one place in the world I never, ever, ever thought I'd be. But the rest of it boils down to like amazing moments. Like, I point to, you know, when Big Nog knocked out Brendan Schaub in Brazil, and like looking around and people like, Big Nog is so beloved there that people are crying in the crowd, like literally tears running down, because everybody thought he was going to lose. You know, he's the old guy that's going to get knocked out by the young guy. So it's moments like that. You know, it's, you know, fights like Aldo Mendez and not being able to hear the bell. It's George St. Pierre fights in Montreal, you know what I mean? At the Bell Center, which is like the loudest venue on earth. So it's moments like that. Vanderlei and Brian Stann in Saitama, you know, I thought that was cool. Like getting to see a Vanderlei Silva fight in Saitama, which was such a legendary venue for him when he was fighting in Pride. So it's moments like that. It's funny. I don't really look back at my own career very often and be like, well, that was a great interview, or that was, you know, here's a funny one. So when Jorge Masvidal, the catchphrase super necessary became a thing, like, I didn't realize until like 6 months later that I asked the question that he was answering to. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, like I watched it back. I was like, oh yeah, that was actually to me. Cause I guess I just don't think about it that way. I don't look at it and be like, oh, that was my question, so I played a part in that. It's like, no, you didn't. It's his answer. It's his quote. So I really don't look back too much on my own accomplishments, but I do look back on moments and things that I've witnessed and been like, damn, that was cool. I mean, it's not a cool thing, but, you know, the whole Fight Island and the return from, you know, COVID-19 with the shows in Jacksonville, like that at the time did feel like this is, you know, this is actual history right here. Like, this is not just me covering some fighting. Like, this is the first sport. I did more interviews that week, you know, of that Jacksonville, of like mainstream sports radio stations and stuff like that. And you know, the hosts were, you know, a lot of times they talk to me off air. They'd be like, hey, before we go on air, just FYI, I don't really know a lot about this sport, so I apologize, but this is just the only sport on right now, so we want to talk about it. And I'm like, absolutely, you know, happy to help educate you however I can. But, you know, like flying to Fight Island and getting over there, and like there's people in hazmat suits greeting us, getting off the plane and like spraying us down with like sanitizer. I don't know what they're spraying us down with. I'm just like, don't think about it. Just go. That one did feel big in terms of like actually being a part of sports history, you know?
How did you become Mr. First Question?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it started out as kind of a simple thing and it's become a bigger thing, which is cool. It's nice. But basically in the early days, you know, that we do these press conferences and USC President Dana White would come out there and he'd be like, all right, you know, hey, we're happy to be here. It's going to be a great event. Does anybody have a question? At that point, the journalists, we would all raise our hands in the air and there'd be PR people and they'd pass a microphone to us and we'd start asking questions. Well, what happened was there were a couple press conferences in a row where it just took a second to get a microphone to anybody. And so there was this weird pause and Dana was actually like, what? Nobody has any questions. Nobody wants to ask anything. And it was like, no, we're just waiting to get the microphone. So Dave Schaller, who was a former USC PR director, he now works with the Philadelphia 76ers in the NBA. He was like, hey, man, I know you're going to have a question and I know it won't be a dumb question. So he's like, do you just want to start with a microphone so we don't have that weird pause where Dana thinks nobody's asking anything? And I'm like, yeah, that'll make it more smooth. No problem. I'll do that. And so we just started doing that. And then after a while, it was just like, all right, well, that's the way we start press conferences. That's the way we start things. And now it's just kind of the routine, I guess.
It's funny how Dana still asks.
Yep.
Like he's still, who's got the first question where? We all know watching the press conference, it's going to be you.
Right? Like, come on, Dana. You know it's me. What are we playing this charade for?
Can you remember the first time you ever interviewed Dana?
Wow. I imagine, you know, it was a while before we got one-on-ones. You know, originally it would have been those scrums that he used to do. You know, he doesn't really do anymore. I mean, we don't do scrums proper anymore yet. I don't know if those will ever come back after the pandemic, but you know, he used to hang around. It was wild, man. He would hang around for like 45 minutes or an hour and we're all just like crowded in. Everybody's got their camera pushed in tight, you know, and you're trying to time your question because everybody's got questions to ask. Everybody's just trying to jump in. And, you know, it would have been one of those for sure. Hey, man, all these firsts. I need to go back and start figuring this out. I guess, you know, it's funny. It just didn't register for me. I guess it was just like, this is a job. I guess I never really realized like 15 years later, it'd be like kind of a legacy or whatever, you know, but yeah, it would have been those scrums early on. And then now, you know, now we get one-on-ones and things like that. So it's a whole different game. Now those scrums were fun though. I hate that he just stopped doing them because, you know, he'd sit there and talk for 45 minutes. And then there would be websites that would pull out like one line of one thing that he said. And that'd be the only thing they wrote about. And it'd be something negative. And he's just like, why am I giving you guys 45 minutes of my time if all you're going to do is write one dumb thing that I said, you know? So those were hectic, but they were fun.
How do you think Dana's changed since over the 15 years you've been covering it?
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say a ton. I would say he's definitely gotten to a point where he cares less about things now in terms of, I think he realizes the machine is so big at this point that if somebody's saying something he doesn't like, he really doesn't need to worry about combating them. It's just like, whatever. I remember when I was asking about, you know, speaking of COVID-19, when we were doing the Jacksonville shows and the New York Times had written a pretty bad, you know, piece saying that it was ridiculous what they were doing. And, you know, obviously the New York Times, that's a pretty big publication, you know, and I was asking, I mean, before I could even finish the question, he's cut me off and he's like, I don't give up. You know what I mean? And he kept saying it over and over. And I'm like, yeah, I could tell you really don't at this point. So, you know, I think he cares a little bit less than he used to. I think he was a little bit more in the past kind of into the day-to-day headlines and who was saying what and why they were saying it. And, you know, let's talk about this and blah, blah, blah. And that's now he just doesn't give a bleep.
If I was to retire you today, John, and I'm sure that's, you know, many years away, what interviews would be your favorites that you'd look back on?
Oh, man, that's great. man, some of the early ones with Ronda Rousey, I guess, you know, I had called a couple of her amateur fights in before she turned pro. And so we kind of had a knowledge of each other, and I had a knowledge of her career and, you know, the early Strikeforce days and into the UFC. And I had, you know, we had a good relationship and some good interviews, and it was cool to see, you know what I mean? Like that was such a historical time too, man. You know, the women coming in the sport, you know, it's, you know, not that I'm going to sit here and say like, oh, I'm just a huge women's rights advocate, and that's what I fight for all the time. But I think it's so cool that the women's sport is viewed right alongside the men's. I feel like we're the only sport that's like that, where it's like, it's the same, you know what I mean? It's so cool to see how that's changed so fast in such a couple of years. You know, I think interviews with Cowboy Cerrone over the years, he doesn't necessarily love doing interviews, but him and I have developed a really good relationship that he feels comfortable with me. And I think, you know, hearing him is one of the first guys I ever heard talk about how nervous he gets, you know, and that used to not be a thing. And I think it's pretty, you know, people talk about it pretty openly now, but it didn't used to be that, you know, everybody was the big, bad cage fighter, da, da, da. And he was one of the first ones. And you think about how frequently he was fighting, and that he was that anybody, anywhere, anytime guy. But the fact that you know, he would openly admit that he like throws up from nerves before a fight. And it's like, what the hell am I doing here? Why am I going out and doing this? Those were some good interviews to hear him talk. So, yeah, I guess people like that I've just, you know, develop relationships with, because I think as people get more comfortable with you and trust you, they kind of open up a little bit more. So I think it's people that you interview multiple times that they start to really, when they get on, you know, on the phone or they get on a camera with you, whatever, you can tell they don't have that guard up. You know what I mean? Where if they've never been interviewed before, they're always like, okay, when's the gotcha question coming? When's the trick coming? You know what I mean? So they're always got their guard up. But when you get to know somebody, you know, they kind of let that down. And I think those lead to some good interviews.
Is there a one interview that stands out that really made a splash in your career that really brought you to prominence?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think, you know, the MMA Junkie grind was just the fact that we were like outworking everybody. You know what I mean? So it was never like, I've never focused on, okay, here's my big feature piece. Here's my big interview. To me, it's always on to the next one, on to the next one, on to the next one. You're like, that one's in the can. Let's go. What's next? So I don't ever look back, and somebody else may say different, you know, somebody from the outside may say, no, it was that interview right there when I first started realizing, okay, I like this John guy or whatever. But no, not to me. I think to me, it was just more, the constant work, you know what I mean? Just the constant volume of work that we put out at MMA Junkie that people started to get respect for and start to just see the repetition. And like I said, asking the first question and always being there and always, you know, always being there. I just think over time, you start to become like a fabric of the product or whatever, you know what I mean? And so I'd say that to me, it's the kind of the culmination of everything rather than anything one in particular.
Something I cover MMA and boxing. It's hard for journalists at times to ask those really, really tricky or questions that everybody wants to hear, because there are times where they will limit your access. For somebody that's coming through, how would you, you know, advise them on that?
I think you can ask anything you want, literally anything you want. But the two things you need to remember are how you ask it and right place, right time, I always say. Like, for instance, you know, If you want to talk about something that's kind of controversial or something that could be an issue, don't do it at a press conference. Like the press conferences, like when they do the big press conferences, like, let's be honest, that's a dog and pony show to promote their upcoming event, right? All they want to talk about the fight. Like they want everything to be about how great this fight is and what's at stake and what's on the line and what's so-and-so going to bring. It's about that fight. So if you've got something controversial, something particular, you know, that could be an issue, that's not the right time to do it. Try to get a one-on-one, try to get them aside, you know, do what you can to get out there. Now, there may be times where you have no choice. Like, for instance, I did, you know, in Abu Dhabi, you'll remember with Conor McGregor, there were some sexual assault allegations ahead of his last fight in Abu Dhabi. I knew the only time we were going to get access to him was going to be at a press conference. So I literally did have to ask at a press conference about sexual assault allegations, which I knew the crowd doesn't care about. They don't want to hear it. I got booed, but it was the only time I was going to get to ask it. So there are instances where if you know that's your only chance to ask it, you do it. But I'm just telling you right now, you're not going to get a good answer because that's not what you're going to do. So time and place is important. And the other thing is just how you phrase everything. Think about the way you're asking something. You know what I mean? I think you can ask about a touchy subject without making it feel like it's an attack. You know what I mean? Without putting somebody on the defense where you know, I think it's easy to just, and I don't even know what a subject would be in particular, but I don't think you have to be like, hey, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Or, hey, you know, when you guys made this decision, can you explain your thought process there or as to why? You know, I think there's ways to do things. So again, you know, I believe it's important to keep good relationships in the industry, you know, and some people say, oh, well, you're not adversarial enough. You know, you need to be more adversarial. And what I always say to them is, yeah, you know, that's cool that you're adversarial, but if all you can get is a no comment from somebody because they don't like you and they don't want to deal with you, then are you really any good anymore? You know what I mean? Like, oh, I get great coverage, but you can't get the comment. You can't get the side. You can't get any information. Maybe you don't think I'm hard enough on them, but I can get the information. I can get the answer. You know what I mean? And I do think there's something to remember in that. It doesn't mean that you have to let them off scot-free, but I don't think you have to be so adversarial in your approach to it, because then they'll just start telling you, hey, I don't want to answer your question anymore. I like Colby Covington to me.
John, do you have anything left in your combat sports bucket list? Anyone you want to speak to? Any places you'd like to travel? Anything like that?
Yeah, to be honest with you, the one that's really important to me, I've been to just about every place in the world that I want to see. But when the UFC does their first show in Africa, I want to be there for that, man. I think that's going to be, you know, historic as well. I mean, especially, boy, if they can, you know, keep things the way they are now with Adesanya and Usman as champions, if they can get things worked out with Francis Ngannou and he can be on that card as well. I mean, can you imagine doing a pay-per-view in Africa with those three guys? I mean, my God, how amazing would that be? So that is a piece of history that I still have on the bucket list. And then personally related, but not professionally related, once I've done that, I've then promised myself I'm going to charter maybe like a helicopter or something. So I'm only there for like 5 minutes, but I got to go to Antarctica because then I'll have been on every continent on the planet. You know what I mean? So I just want to like get in a helicopter, jump off, set my feet on the ground, and then, you know, all right, let's get the hell out of here. It's freezing. Let's go. So those are probably the two last things in travel. And then for the rest of it, you know, fortunately, I think it's in terms of like athletes or figures or whatever, like I've been able to talk to literally everybody in the sport. But I always like finding the next ones, man. I still love it at a grassroots level. You know, I do commentary on Fight Pass for an organization called CFFC, and I love doing that. You know, seeing the next wave of stars come through and identifying who's going to be next. And so, you know, there's nobody here that I haven't talked to that I'd like to, but I want to keep talking to the new ones coming up. You know,
I really enjoy that. Since you touched on that, is there anybody that you saw coming up that didn't make it? And is there anybody you saw coming up that you were right about and other people didn't know him, but you spotted him?
Yeah, there's been a couple over the years. I mean, like there's very few that I'll say, like Habib was one that the first time I saw him, I'm like, that dude's going to be UFC champion. Like there's no question about it in my mind. The first time I saw him, like that dude will be UFC champ. Normally it's hard for me to say, like I rarely go that far, but I do look at guys and say, you know, I bet that person will challenge for a title at one point. Cause you have to have a certain amount of success. And then when you get there, it just depends on the matchup that night and how you execute that night. So but Habib was one of the only one where the first time I saw him, like that dude is going to be a UFC champion. A lot of the other ones, it's just been more like, I bet that person fights for a title, or I see some greatness in them. And then they do end up being something pretty special, but it is pretty cool. That's another one too. And it's like, I always tell people like, hey man, watch this person. But then I never like keep track of it. Like, I don't know. Like I don't keep scoreboard. Like I told you guys that was going to be the guy, but Habib is one that always sticks out in my mind that I knew for, I was like, that dude will not just challenge for a title. That dude will be a champion.
Obviously the latest news is obviously you left MMA Junkie and went to the Underground, which is now joined up with the Sports Illustrated. If you could just tell us the reasonings behind all of that.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. You know, I did a little over 15 years with MMA Junkie, so it was a difficult decision to make, man. You know, I was part owner in it at one time. We sold it in 2011. I didn't have a huge share, but, you know, definitely helped get it off the ground, and it had a huge place in my heart. But the truth was, it was just kind of moving in a different direction. You know, it had come under some different leadership, and him and I had very different ideas of what the site should be doing, and very different ideas of what I should be doing, to be honest with you. And so we just had different perspectives on how things should go. And that made it frustrating. It was getting a little difficult in the final months. But so I wasn't necessarily happy towards the end of my journey, if I'm being honest. Still loved the sport, but just wasn't happy with, you know, kind of my work situation. And then this opportunity came up to be editor-in-chief of The Underground, which, you know, if anybody doesn't know, in the early days of the sport, you know, it was launched in 1998. this was a hugely influential message board and forums, you know, that fighters were on. Dana White used to post in it. You know, this was a great place to have conversation. But they never really did anything with the website itself. It's got a great URL. It's mixedmartialarts.com. I mean, you can't beat that, right? But they never really did anything with it. And so this opportunity came up, and you know, I heard that they were interviewing some people, and I actually reached out to Takirik and Chris and Gabe, who are the guys that run it. It's just a small little LLC that runs it. And I was like, hey, listen, I know you guys probably weren't expecting me to reach out, but I think I might be ready for a change. You know, let's talk. And they were incredibly receptive, incredibly supportive, incredibly, you know, respectful of everything I'd ever done. And we're like, dude, we'd love to have you, and you can kind of do what you want with it. We'll turn over the keys to you. And I was like, man, that's awesome. To have that kind of faith in me means a lot, you know. And a big part of it too, honestly, was I love doing commentary for CFFC. MMA Junkie wasn't exactly supportive of me doing commentary, and I want to do more of it. I really, really enjoy calling fights. I feel like it's kind of a next stage of my career as well, to add to it in addition to, you know, what I do as a journalist. So, and the guys at the Underground were like, absolutely. We love that. We think it's amazing that you're doing it. So, just a completely different work environment. It feels like starting over. We're a staff of one right now. You know, I'm hoping to get some revenues going, and we'll bring a couple people in here and there. For now, it's just me grinding away. So, it's been more work, not less, that's for sure. But it reminds me of the early days of building MMA Junkie, you know, when we didn't have anything. And it's kind of cool to be the one saying, hey, you know what, you know what I think we should do today? We should do this. And that's what we do. You know what I mean? We do whatever it is. So it's exciting. And it's just starting. I mean, I'm a week in at this point, basically, week and a half, but it's already been rewarding.
Any ideas of what the future holds or what your aims are with the link up with Sports Illustrated?
Yeah. You know, kind of learning that relationship as well, you know, but they're featuring our content on a national stage, which is awesome. You know, I just did an interview with Kayla Harrison talking about her new contract at the PFL. And right away, you know, they put that up and featured that nationally. So really, you know, I don't know the whole team over there. Obviously that's a huge corporation, so I don't know the whole team over there, but my understanding is that they've got some new executives behind the scenes that are really supportive of mixed martial arts. You know, they hadn't done much MMA coverage. They decide, you know what, we do need to do some more mixed martial arts coverage. And I'm like, you know, great, let me help you with that. You know, they just in the week and a half that I've been here, you know, if you go to si.com, the homepage, they added like an MMA section on the nav bar. You know, they didn't used to have one. That was never there. It was always, you know, how some places it'll be under the other or whatever, yeah. You know, it was buried in the other, you know, and now it's out of the other, and it's up on the top bar. So they're showing support there. And, you know, they're talking about how we can do more things and do some additional stuff. So, yeah, I think we're still kind of growing that, or we're figuring it out, but they're supportive of it. And it's cool to see. I think that's what's kind of neat about it. Cause a lot of people were like, I know when I left, you know, a lot of people were like, it's gotta be ESPN, right? It's gotta be, you know, why would you leave MMA Junkie and USA Today, like two premier brands? And they are two premier brands, but to go to the Underground, which is an even older brand, an even more legacy brand, you know, it doesn't have the respect in the space that a Junkie does, but I think we can get there. You know what I mean? It takes some time, and it has even more history in the space. And then you go to like Sports Illustrated. I mean, that's one of the greatest names in all the sports journalism ever. You know what I mean? So to partner with those two, and again, you know, while I was kind of looking for a change for that opportunity to come up, I was like, man, how often is something like this going to pop up? Let's do it.
One question to leave it on, John. What advice would you give someone who wants to follow in your footsteps?
Don't. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. You know, listen, first of all, you know that it's not, you know, it's not an industry where you're going to get rich. That's for sure, man. I mean, there are some high paying jobs at the very top end of the food chain, but there's not a whole lot of them out there. And there's going to be a whole lot of grinding in between. So just be prepared for that. You know, if you can have a secondary income that to help support yourself while you start the journey, I would recommend you do it because it's a tough one. But the bottom line I always tell people is just start, just do it, just get after it. And those other topics that we talked about, you know, those things that we talked about earlier about starting local and building relationships and getting experience, of being mindful of things that you say and what you write and what you put on social media, and knowing that that stuff all represents you and your brand. And it will get back to the people that you cover, you know, being mindful of that and just working your ass off, you know, make sure that, you know, if you are working for somebody that you're doing everything on time, you're turning in clean copy, you know, you're doing everything that you can to do it right and to make your editor's job easier, because they're going to help kind of move you along as well. So, but I do, you know, if it's somebody in the industry, you know, I think you kind of know the path and it just takes a while. It is weird how this industry works, because like jobs won't be there. And then all of a sudden, like, there's a little bit of a domino move. Like, you know, the fact that I came over to the underground, I'm sure that means now MMA Junkie is going to be hiring somebody or two people. You know what I mean? The positions that didn't exist 10 days ago, you know what I mean? So you just, you never know. You just have to, you know, kind of bide your time and look for your opportunity. But what I always say in the meantime is just do what you do, whatever it is you want to do, whether it's writing, videography, podcast, just do it. Just do it. Get practice at it, because the more practice at it, the better you'll be.
Thanks again, John, for your time. If you want to tell everybody where they can find you on your social media handles, websites, whatever else you've got going on.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to follow me on Twitter, as for now, it's at MMA Junkie John. I mean, I'm trying to change that without being verified or without losing the verification status. So I'm sure that'll change soon, but you can find me now at MMA Junkie John on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram at John Morgan MMA. If you like hearing me talk MMA, there is the MMA Roadshow podcast as well. We get together with my buddy Cole Coffee, Ken Hathaway, every Thursday. We drink a couple frosty beverages and talk some MMA. So you can find that on all the normal places, the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan.
We are at The Last Round on Instagram and Twitter. And catch us next time. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLRMMA. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLRMMA.